You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch. Welcome, everyone, as you always are, Fridays here on the nation's number one most listened to internet talk radio station, LA Talk Radio. This is the place where we talk about getting you feeling better mentally and, of course, physically. They do go together, and we're going to be talking about that today as well and how important that is. And also, I always encourage you to think about, you know, getting help if you have issues going on. Trying to talk to someone who might be able to help you, you know, and getting proper therapy. And we're going to be talking about a great therapeutic treatment today. I'm just going to give you a taste of that. It's called TA, Transactional Analysis. And that's been around for quite a while, but we're going to learn a lot more about it. Some of the ideas and how you can get help from it. You know, what's going on today? America spend, oh my goodness, $2.6 trillion a year. That's the estimation that they're saying right now on healthcare. But only a small fraction of that currently goes to treating those who are coping with psychological problems, mental health problems. And I'm not necessarily talking about folks who have, you know, psychiatric serious disorders. Yes, of course, I'm talking about that. But also just folks who want to talk to somebody, but their medical plans are charging them a lot more. Their medical plans are not looking at what's going on in terms of, yeah, the body needs to be treated, but the mind does as well. Whether it's addiction, whether it's relationship problems, whether it's just life stressors. We've got, you know, veterans. We've got people dealing with we're calling it the Great Recession. A lot of depression going on. And, you know, like I said, there's the psychiatric patients. For years, we look at medical and physical care as more important than taking care of mental health issues. It's just been that way. You know, but thankfully, there are people out there helping to not only heal the body, but the mind as well. And we're going to be talking to one of those experts who does that in her work today. And you're going to learn a lot. Her name is Dr. Susan Clark. And she'll be my special guest talking about transactional analysis and how it can help you. She actually wrote Clark's Dictionary of Transactional Analysis. This is an undertaking. She said she was going to do it for a long time. And in her foreword, she said, I did it. Finally did it. And as I'm looking through it and I read throughout the dictionary, I'm looking at 543 pages with bibliography information, of course. But if you want to know anything about transactional analysis and the, you know, original concepts that were created by Byrne, Eric Byrne, to be exact, and then the newer concepts that are out, and how much this has influenced popular psychology and how it can help you, you've got to listen today because this is really going to help you. And I want to just let you know that what's terrific about Dr. Clark is after about 20 years working as a healer, she's come to see that being healthy involves much more, as we all do here on the couch at LA Talk Radio, than just looking at the body as a sum of its parts. The goal of the basic life force within each of us is not just to be healthy, she says, but also to have vibrancy, passion, joy, harmony, and peace in our daily lives. And that's really what it's all about, guys. The mind and the body really are connected. It is so true. So we're going to kind of talk about a lot of those tools that Dr. Clark uses from a cross-section of healing strategies. And we're going to ask her what she does and why also she decided to really focus on transactional analysis, why that's so great. And we'll all learn about that right now. We have Dr. Clark on the line with us right now. Welcome to the couch. Susan, how are you?
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Michelle.
It's lovely to have you here. I'll tell you, this was an undertaking. Clark's Dictionary.
Uh-huh.
How modest you are.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But you did it. You said you were going to do it. And it's an amazing, you know, just a group of information. It has everything, you know, in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking about how people can find out more about transactional analysis and get a hold of your book. And, mm-hmm. well, you know, let me just say also, folks, that I did not set this up yet, but you are earning your living as a doctor of chiropractic, and you specialize,
yes,
in treatment of long-term chronic health problems, which include PTSD, migraines, allergies, plus the more usual pain issues. And you say that here, and I'm just reading the bio information that was provided, which is amazing. You use a cross-section of healing strategies. And can you share some of those strategies that you use for the listeners?
Yes. Well, I'm a perpetual student, so I'm always learning new stuff.
Yep.
I'm always looking for the most effective way to help people through whatever it is they have going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll use applied kinesiology, which is muscle testing.
Mm.
That's like a diagnostic evaluation technique. I use several physical therapy techniques.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I see craniosacral therapy, nutritional counseling, and, of course, mm-hmm. what we're going to be talking about today is, you know, your Clark's Dictionary of Transactional Analysis. So you've been a longtime student of TA. Let's just call it TA, or I'll refer to it as transactional,
yeah,
analysis to help
TA,
folks out.
Yeah.
Why what was so wonderful about TA to you? What was so exciting?
That's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
It got me to look at what wasn't working in my life in a way that traditional therapies hadn't done so far.
Yes.
I had a very dysfunctional upbringing, and I mean a lot of people do, with a lot of moving around and mm-hmm. being institutionalized at age 5 when it was put in a boarding school.
Oh,
and,
yes.
It just fit. And I was,
yes,
also really lucky because I studied with Jean Isley Clark, who is a longtime TA person,
mm-hmm.
and wrote Self-Esteem, A Family Affair,
yes,
back in the 70s.
Oh, yes. That was most helpful to you then.
Yes.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I think, you know, healers such as yourself, Dr. Clark, and practitioners, psychotherapists, therapists such as myself, you know, we many times do come from a background that is dysfunctional or problematic, and that's why we seek out to understand, you know, our identity, who we are, what we are. Are we really those bad people and the ones who were tossed around when we were children, and, you know, discover how we can heal from that and then help others, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they all have their place. I reckon mm-hmm. that we get weird stuff,
yeah,
like we start believing weird stuff or acting weirdly from all,
sure,
kinds of different aspects.
Of course.
Of people. So we need all kinds of different people to actually get well.
It's so true. I agree with you. So for listeners' sake, and we're particularly talking about your dictionary, so people can really understand and refer to it, and, you know, what is transactional analysis? That's a broad question, I know. But
well, it's actually got a very simple answer.
Cool.
It's a theory of personality and social action and interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what makes TA different from most psychologies mm-hmm. is that is observable. You can actually see what's going on with people. Mm. Yes. And the other thing that TA does is it diagrams everything. So you can draw a diagram of an interaction. And yes. People, like my clients, get to see exactly what happened. And they go, oh, I can manage that.
Yes. You know, I really do agree. I love the visuals, and you have all the diagrams in your dictionary, by the way. It is great to not only hear it, have the audio version of, you know, the audible version of someone teaching you different aspects of transactional analysis, but then you see the diagrams that Byrne and other contemporary TA theorists have put out. And it does make a lot more sense to people. You know, it's a lot mm-hmm. easier. So what do you think influenced Byrne to create TA?
Well, he definitely marched to a different drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And he started looking at, he was very interested in people being cured, like really getting well, really having a handle on whatever was going on with them.
Yes.
So he started to look at how did people interact?
Mm-hmm.
How did they say something?
Yes.
And he studied with people who, did the ego states, for instance. When I say ego states, I'm mm-hmm. talking about a way of looking at a human being mm-hmm. and how they interact.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he just came up with a very simplified way of dealing with these ego states,
yes.
which is parent,
mm-hmm.
which has values, standards, ideals, rules, regulation. It's a parent who tells you to look both ways before you cross the street.
Right.
Don't lie. You know, that kind of thing. And then yeah. there's the adult, which is what you and I are doing at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the child,
mm-hmm.
which is the spontaneous, creative part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you can draw these diagrams and show where people come from.
Mm-hmm.
And he was interested in just what made people tick.
Yes, and he came from old school. He was trained in, what, psychoanalytic from, you know, Freud's uh-huh. original, theories, which, you know, were brilliant. Of course, but
oh, yes.
You know, he moved away and said, wait a minute, let's make this language a little more understandable for people. And of course, through his research and observations and work, was he trained or did he teach Erik Erikson? Was he trained by
He was trained by, I think. You know
Erikson?
What? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd have to go look that up.
But no,
he's
that's okay. I just kind of threw that out. I have to as well, but I was looking through some of the information. But that's a huge influence on him as well, because it's just kind of, it's just a little more, it makes understanding who we are a lot more clear when you read Erikson's stuff as well. But Byrne really set it out in transactional analysis. So he talked about, you know, in his, I guess his best known work is probably The Games People Play, right? Is that the book that came out in 64?
Right. And yeah, that's right. Yeah. One of his early ones. Yeah.
And it really,
okay, let's go back a bit. It's
okay.
An early popular book. He did have an earlier book for psychotherapists.
Really? What was that about?
That's TA in psychotherapy.
Aha. So that really helped out.
Then,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then he did Games People Play, which really caught people's imagination.
Yes. So it was more for popular, you know, for lay people mm-hmm. who could really understand what we are about. And it is literally, I mean, we do play games. We do have, you know, and there's no judgment here at all from him, right? But a lot of people think that it really altered the way we think and how we understand relationships. Now, in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in
your book, you define, the book, by the way, is called The Dictionary of Transactional Analysis. And you're really talking about many, many, many concepts in Byrne's TA, right?
It is a dictionary.
It is a dictionary.
I like dictionaries.
It's beautiful. I love it. It's like, let's just go through all the concepts, A through Z, and understand this. But you really define Byrne's most popular concepts, you know, as the three ego states. So, right, we have all those ego states within us, and we'll get a little bit more into that because I want people to understand how they act sometimes. And you also define what are called life scripts and what he calls strokes, which is very, very 60s, but really true, right? And also games, yeah. The games we play. So to help listeners understand these theories a little bit more, because I really think it can help them and understand themselves, let's go back a little bit with the ego states as Byrne described them. So you talked about, okay, we have the child, we have the adult, yeah, and then we have the parent. So do we all have that within us? Do we all have those aspects of you know, within us?
Everybody has, even a little child, they don't have like an adult and a parent. They kind of grow those as they get more experience. But we all have that parent, like overseer, overviewer person of us that deals with the ethics of life. Mm-hmm. The rules, the regulations, how do you live with each other, what you should or shouldn't do.
Right.
And that comes from the child part.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What? That comes from our parents. That comes from our upbringing or caregivers or whatever environment we were in order to, I guess, behave. Right.
Right. Well, for instance, one day you went to your boss, mm-hmm, and you were like, okay, you know what? And you said to him or her, okay, I want to do a new radio program, and this is my idea. And your boss was like, oh, that sounds great. Okay. And you could, that would be adult to adult. Mm-hmm. And it would just, you know, you could problem solve whatever. Mm-hmm. But say you went in and it was a Friday afternoon and your boss was like, I've got to go. I don't want to think about that now. Mm. That would be like, you wouldn't be speaking to the adult anymore. You'd be speaking to the child part of somebody. Hmm. I don't want it, that rebellious part. Mm-hmm. Or say you went in and he or she said, why are you asking me this? Mm-hmm. This is not an appropriate time. Mm-hmm. Then, again, that would completely stop you, right? That would be coming from parent, like what we call the critical parent. Mm. And it would be essentially like telling you off.
Yes.
So I can draw that. I can draw that. And people say, oh, I got it. I now know what the problem is.
Yes. Yes. So the problem is maybe I need to be, you know, emphasize more of the adult, or here I can be the child, but yet. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we can sort of identify. Yeah. And don't you think, Dr. Clark, that we also sort of address certain individuals and certain, like you just gave the great example, but certain individuals in our life in different ways. What I see with a lot of patients is that they become, or especially around the holidays, my adult patients, when they get with their family, their parents, their older parents, they become that child again. They kind of revert back into these personalities that are, what? Their mates say to me, they act like children in front of their parents, you know, they become this little thing.
They do. Yeah. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Being...
Oh, yes, yeah. I know my... Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking about if we go on to talking about games.
Yes.
Which we started off on.
Yes.
I was just thinking of an incident with my mother.
Yes.
When I was just in practice, mm-hmm, and my son was about 8, mm-hmm, and we went and had portraits done.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, this was like a big deal.
Yeah.
And my mum looked at the photo and she said, oh, that's a really nice photo, darling. But you shouldn't wear earrings with a vest.
Yes.
Yes, right. Okay. She came on the critical parent and I went, oops. And it took me a good couple of weeks to have to come back and say, Mom, this was a present to you.
Yes. Yes. And because of your training and expertise, Dr. Clark, you understood that there was a process of, because it did kind of throw you back into that old child place again.
Yes.
It's scary how that happens, isn't it? I can identify. And you know what? And with, gosh, and with that, you know, and I know that listeners out there are identifying with this as well, but we feel it's not a comfortable feeling to be thrown into that child position again and feel all sorts of uncomfortable feelings of a guilt and, ooh, we have to walk on eggshells and, ooh, we have to please or we have to be the rebellious child or whatever, right? Whatever forms.
And you're right. It is uncomfortable.
It sure is. But If you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio, folks, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Dr. Susan Clark. She has written Clark's Dictionary of Transactional Analysis. It's called TA. It's a compendium of definitions, diagrams, references, awards, biographies, organizations. If you want to know about transactional analysis, which is a revolutionary treatment and theory of, you know, it kind of came out of psychoanalysis, but boy, did he spin it and revolutionize the whole, I think the whole subject of therapy and relationship between therapist and client and how we need to think about ourselves. This is the book to get, and we're going to tell you how to get it a little bit later in the show. We're talking to Susan, Dr. Clark as well, about all of the different you know, components to Dr. Burns' theory. And one of them, and I want to go back to it because it's such an interesting concept, Dr. Clark, of the games we all play. Can you elaborate a little bit more on how Eric Byrne described those?
Oh, a game. Well, it's now in popular. I mean, one of the pitfalls of TA is it used popular words. So game, for instance, it sounds like really simple, and it is. And at the same time, it's quite complex. When you're playing a game, a real game, both people end up feeling ripped off or not okay about themselves. And it's based upon, like, somebody will say something, and the other person will just get this feeling of, like, oh, my goodness, what am I doing?
Yeah, sure.
And then, yeah, and it goes from there. So two people, it can be a short interaction, it can be a long one, where both people end up with a negative payoff.
Right. And, you know, there's also, and what I like also about Byrne is that he you know, explains how there's a lot of manipulation going on with the different kinds of games that we play. You know, I mean, it's, yeah. How can we kind of manipulate someone to whatever, make them feel bad for us, get what we want out of them, or whatever it may be. He actually listed, as I read, 142 games that people play with each other in his book, Games People Play. But in your Dictionary of Transactional Analysis, you give definitions of 30 of these, because obviously, you know, that would be 600 pages added to your book if you went on about. But what I love to talk about this kind of thing with my patients, because I think it helps them understand the games they play. And again, it is popular language and stuff. But one of the most common games I see with people is the Ain't It Awful game.
Yes.
Can you describe a little bit more what this is and kind of the theory as to why we do this?
Well, you know, I'll throw it back to you. It's like, Dr. Michelle, do you know people who, when you talk to them, they do, like, oh, goodness, isn't it awful? The government is doing this, or my neighbor is doing that. Mm. And they really get off on, or my kids are doing this. Oh, and it's just so bad, and I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And they really get off on and are seeking recognition for how life doesn't work for them.
Yes, yes.
I'm sure you know people. I mean, I know people. Okay. Yes.
It's like misery loves company.
Oh, yes. That would be an Ain't It Awful. Yes. That's an Ain't It Awful game.
Yes. And, you know,
yes.
So.
And what Byrne did, which was so good, is he broke down the different components of the game so that you could see exactly what part you were playing and where you were playing it.
Mm-hmm. So it helps.
So
us,
if I start saying. Okay, so I interrupted.
No, you go. I'm sorry.
Okay, so if I start, I'm with my daughter, we're doing Ain't It Awful. I will say something, which he called the con or the confidence trick, and she will respond with, and then we will just go backwards and forwards. But at some point, we talk about switching an ego state. So if I'm started, like, we're doing adult, and then all of a sudden I go to, well, you know what, this is what they should do, and she's not prepared for it, we both end up feeling like, I don't think I like this conversation.
Yes.
And but people get strokes in that. They get recognition. They fill up that human need for recognition, for assurance. mm-hmm. for being seen.
Yes, yes. It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? It really does.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that what you do in your business? You see
yes.
people.
Yes.
When people come to see you, you see them, mm-hmm. and they get that recognition, they get that affirmation that they exist.
Absolutely. You said it. Yeah. And it's more like, you know, it's supportive therapy. You know, exactly. But, you know, and it depends on the style of the therapist or the psychologist. But, yeah, you know, we try to spin it to a positive place, as I know you always do in your work. And, you know, it's not easy to do sometimes, especially with people who are entrenched in ain't it awful. You know, it's tough. I mean, we all go there, though, I guess.
Yeah. And for some people, you know, the training is so deep that's the only way they know how to relate to someone.
Mm-hmm. Those neural patterns get pretty formed for long periods of times, don't they?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah, neurology is that neural stuff. Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know another.
In your business, you help people create new neural patterns.
I try.
Yeah. And PA does as well.
Yes, so. It does. And, you know, it is a wonderful, you know, therapy, and it has revolutionized therapy to this day. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, this is Dr. Michelle, and we're talking about transactional analysis, and we're talking to one of the experts today, Dr. Susan Legender Clark. She wrote Clark's Dictionary of Transactional Analysis, which was originally created by Eric Byrne, and then there have been updates and more contemporary spins. And, you know, some of the books that have been out which are, by the way, in the bibliography, if you'd like to get a little bit more contemporary spin on his theories. But they're amazing, and they really changed the face of psychology, because he came from old school Freud and changed it up, you know. By the way, I want to mention that Dr. Clark is a doctor of chiropractic, specializing in treatment of long-term chronic health problems, all the health problems, pain issues as well. And, of course, she uses nutritional counseling, kinesiology, cranial sacral therapy, and transactional analysis. So it's, you know, Susan's theory, and I'm, you know, just acknowledging, is to heal the body and the mind. Because they really are one. I mean, if we're out, you know, of our minds, we're not well. It is our body. We don't feel well, you know. And then if we have physiological issues, then we get depressed. So they work hand in hand, right, Dr. Clark?
Yes, very true.
Yeah. So talking about those games, there's another game that many people play, which I'm fascinated with. And I'm indulging here because we play it from that child ego state, and I see it a lot in patients. It's called the blemish game. Can you describe this one a little bit more?
Well, that was what my mom did when I gave her the photograph, the portrait that I had thought was just a great present for her. And she said, I mean, I could still hear her voice saying, "Darling, it's a lovely photo, but you really shouldn't wear earrings with a vest." That's blemish. Mm. It's like finding the thing that didn't work, finding the place that you didn't get it right from their point of view.
Yes.
And it might or might not be true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's point of view. I thought I looked good with earrings and a vest.
Yes.
You know?
You did.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And
you looked lovely.
Yeah.
It takes a while for us, though, to believe that if we're constantly told you should, you know.
Yeah.
And one of the most other, I think, prevalent games that I see with couples is pardon my language, folks, but there's an acronym, but I'm just going to say it. And I loved that Byrne spelled this out. It's the "now I've got you, you son of a bitch" game.
Right. Yeah. Well, remember he wrote this in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the 70s when this was certainly okay.
Sure.
But it's one of those ones where you're at the mercy of somebody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a bullying, essentially a bullying game. You're at the mercy of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a game that personally I find very difficult to deal with. If somebody wants to come at me that way, you know, they think they have me at their mercy. It's one I don't deal well with.
Sure. Yeah. And I think, don't you think, Dr. Clark, most people, you know, have a hard time because, you know, again, it is coming from, it is that parental guilt sort of negative place. And what I see is a lot of couples, they just hang on, they hang on to guilt, you know, they have something hanging over you, or they're always trying, it's like a contest. It's like, well, yeah, but, you know,
but.
You know,
yes, but that's a game. That's a very common game. Do I actually have that one there?
No, I
why was, don't yeah. you, yes, number 28. Why don't you? Yes, but.
Yes, exactly. Yes, but. Yes, but. You know, and that is a common one that I think a lot of people can identify with.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's very easy to see where people end up not feeling okay because you're trying to help. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be helped. So they go away saying, well, you didn't help me.
Yeah.
But they don't feel good. And your advice was a pagan, mm-hmm. so you don't feel good. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So another part of, and you guys can, again, read about all these games that we play in Dr. Clark's Dictionary of Transactional Analysis, because, I mean, it's fascinating, because when you start reading through it, you go, oh, my God, I know people who do that, or I know people who treat me like that, or I do that to other people, and maybe I should stop, because it's not very nice or healthy. And it also, like you said, Susan, with the diagrams there's lots of diagrams, which are actually visual tools that can help you understand the concepts a lot better, which are great. Those are, you know, some of the games we play. Let's move on to another concept that I always thought was so fascinating and straightened out a lot of people, that concept that Byrne had of life scripts. Can you sort of explain what that's about?
Oh, yeah. Script, well, we all, as children, make a decision about the world. Here we are with the emergent human beings, and we're looking at adults doing inexplicable things.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to survive. So you make a decision, start thinking, okay, is this how the world works? Is that how the world works? And then you look around for evidence mm-hmm. to support that position. And when you find the evidence, it's like, okay, this is how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I would have to do in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why people, for instance, I mentioned earlier, I got institutionalized. I got sent to boarding school when I was age 5.
Yes.
And I had been grumbling to my grandmother. I'd been moved around for about 3 years, from family to family to family, you know, 2 months here, 3 months there.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, the family got together and said, we can't do this. Susan should have a permanent place.
Mm.
A good adult decision.
Yes.
However, I'd been living with my at that time with my grandmother and grandfather, mm. and there was nobody to play with. We were in the depths of the country in the south of England.
Yes.
And I was complaining. I wanted playmates.
Yes.
And so they told me that I was going to a place where I was going to have lots of little girls to play with.
Yes.
Oh, I was excited.
Mm-hmm.
But I got there, and it wasn't quite how I thought it would be.
Mm.
And I decided that I was not going to want anymore.
Oh.
That it was too dangerous to want.
Sure.
And you know what? I mean, in my 70s, I'm still dealing with mm-hmm. difficulty about wanting. So it's like, that's a life script issue.
Yes.
And everybody makes some sort of decision somewhere about that.
Yes.
About how their life is.
Right. That makes so much sense. And thank you for being so candid, by the way, Dr. Clark, about your upbringing. Because, I mean, we all have, this is, you know, lovely. And I so appreciate it when, you know, an expert and a researcher and a doctor can be open and explain, you know, where, you know, they, what fascinated them and what motivated them to really help others, you know, as well. And the upbringing, such a big thing, you know, and
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Life scripts though are so important, because when we do look back at little messages, you know, what I hear, let's see, commonly is, from, a lot of women, and men as well, but more from women is, well, I learned early on that if I open up my heart to men, I'll get, you know, rejected, or I will always be criticized, or I'll be, because dad left, Dad was absent. He was a drug addict and didn't care about me. But when I did see him, he acted like it was a chore, you know, and then on and on. And then why do I keep attracting these kinds of men in my life? You know, so I choose in my life script to decide that I'm not going to open up my heart or be, I'm going to be more promiscuous and I'm going to play games. I'm going to be cold. Or I'm going to be, I don't have time for you game, but you're going to have to chase me game. Because that was my life script in order to survive the possibility that I may be rejected again by yet but another man in my life. You know?
Yes. Oh, yes.
So here they are, you know, 40-something. And, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that because they need to learn and get help. And here they are. And thank God, you know, anytime you want to get help, it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
So you learn, you kind of move on, you realize what your life script and fears were, and you try to move on with your life and sort of say, you know what, you do deserve healthy people in your life. And if you do open up your heart, you're not going to be stomped on. You just have to do it slowly. And there are wonderful people out there for you.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that bit about there's nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people take this stuff and say, oh, but I shouldn't be this way.
Mm.
And the truth of the matter is, you are. So what?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's just, that's what you're given. Look at the skills.
Yes. That's right. And, you know, we were talking about this last night, a couple of my colleagues and I. We all have stuff. Every single one of us has life scripts based on messages we received that were not too good, you know, growing up about our identity, our feelings, who we are, our worth, our worthiness, you know, being loved. And so many, you know, and you're right, Dr. Clark. A lot of people say, well, I shouldn't be feeling like this. Yes, you should. It's normal. Right?
Yes.
I would be feeling this way, too, if I were in your shoes, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's really true. And by the way, in case you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio, this is Dr. Michelle. You're on the couch with me. My special guest today is Dr. Susan Clark. She has written Clark's Dictionary of Transactional Analysis, which was originally created by Eric Byrne. It comes from the psychoanalytic school, but clarified. And man, he has affected so many different ways of helping people in today's therapeutic world. So maybe we could also talk about the other big concept that he shares. It's called strokes. What's that about? What are strokes?
Strokes is a unit of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
It can be negative or positive.
Yeah.
So the whole time you and I have been talking, we're stroking each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're great.
Mm-hmm.
You are just delightful to talk with. Yeah, you know, that's a stroke. It's true, too, by the way.
And that's how I feel. So.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's true.
But, you know, oftentimes people have what we call a stroke bank. Well, we all have a stroke bank and rather like a piggy bank.
Mm-hmm.
And we allow ourselves so many good pennies, good strokes, and so many bad strokes, negative strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people, when they grow up in odd families where there's very little nurturing going on, they will get so used, they will fill up their stroke bank with negative strokes.
Mm-hmm.
They will go after, they'll go after something, and they'll say things like, do you like my hair? And I'll say, oh, yeah, it's really good. Like the haircut. Well, I don't think she did it too well. And what they'll do is I'll say, you're great. And the person will turn around and turn that into like a negative. Or they'll say, oh, thank you, which is a positive.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them, they're both units of recognition.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So we have to sort of be aware of the strokes. We can't be suspicious, though, that other people aren't truly trying to be kindly and, right?
Uh-huh.
It's rather confusing sometimes.
Be. I mean, if you are, you're going to turn it into a negative stroke. That's all.
Uh-huh. I see. And that depends on the individual and how you perceive it, would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, okay, so if in my piggy bank,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have reached my daily allotment of positive strokes.
Uh-huh.
Then the next time somebody, I'll interact with somebody, it will be with the intent of getting a negative one.
Yes.
Because this stroke ratio is about survival. How did we survive as a kid? If we lived in a family, there was a lot of nurturing and a lot of, like, conditional, you know, unconditional care,
mm-hmm.
unconditional love, a lot of good structure, then our stroke banks would be mostly positive. But what if we, you know, grew up in one of those families that you talked about, where there's drug addiction and where there is, where people are struggling just to survive?
Hmm.
Well, I'm not saying there's anything bad or wrong about it, but the very often there is a lack of good strokes. There just isn't. People don't have the time to think about how to do it.
Yeah. Yes, it makes a lot of sense, you know. And of course, strokes are normal in you know, appropriate society, you know, how we connect with other people, just in general out there in the world. I mean, it's really important to learn appropriate responses in you know, social situations.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about TV ads. I was just thought, well, I wonder what kind of do they sell a stroke bank need?
Hmm.
Because they often tell people they're not okay, or imply that people are not okay.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Hmm. No, that's true. That makes a lot of sense. Speaking about which, what is the I'm okay, you're okay deal about? What is that? You know, we've all heard that one. I'm okay, you're okay.
Yeah. Well, that's like whether you come from a negative place or a positive place.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm okay, you're okay. We're both in the positive realm.
Mm-hmm.
Most people switch between I'm okay, you're not okay,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not okay, you are okay.
Mm.
So it's like, it's very difficult for people to live in, for both people to live in, know that neither of them are okay.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to be people who are quite crazy.
Yes, yes.
Because it's hard work living there. And even somebody who's really mentally disturbed will want to at times be in an okay position with themselves.
Sure.
It's like, yes, are you all right? I'm all right. You're all right. We're both all right. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when I think, oh, goodness me. Let's see. Oh, I missed this. I've got a client and I missed something. Shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy then to go to the I'm not okay place, and I think, no, I missed it. I can pick it up next time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a way of being.
It is. It's a way of being. It's a way of perceiving, and, you know, again, based on those old life scripts and those old survival techniques, it's, you know, how we perceive other people and stuff. And I love the way Byrne made it so simple. I'm okay. I'm not okay. You're not okay. And like you said, a lot of folks who have, you know, serious mental illness are the I'm not okay, you're not okay. And that's, you know, I would put that in the paranoia, you know, category.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's just paranoid about everything, and they can't help themselves. They really can't.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very difficult. I'd like to really talk about how TA also has affected, you know, popular culture, how influential this was to the way people think today.
Yeah. Well, how has it affected your business? Because you're more of a psychologist. I'm in education in TA.
Yes.
I'm in the educational wing. You're in the mm-hmm. psychological wing.
Yes.
So you're going to know more about that than I do.
Yes. So in your educational, I think it's affected. I mean, I think it's just transformed from old school psychoanalytic thinking. You know, it's transformed into new ideas about how we all, you know, and I do believe in early, you know, influences and imprints in our brain and how we react. And it's all about survival. And he's created, and so this is what we teach. You know, even cognitive behavioral psychology is understanding to, you know, how you think and change the way you think in order to make yourself understand that you have built-in life scripts that are not so good. So you've got to change it up.
Yeah.
I mean, every aspect, I think, of new therapy has been changed by transactional analysis. I really think. How about in education? How's that changed, you know, educating folks?
Well, the difference between therapy, which is therapy, mm-hmm. educational tends to be therapeutic, which means that when I'm teaching and I'm teaching from a TA standpoint, people are given a choice whether they're going to do something or not. They're given options.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other branch of TA, because we haven't actually managed mentioned this, but the other branch of PA is organizational, where people use it in organizations to deal with how do teams work together.
What a great idea.
And this is really big in Europe. Not so big here, but it's very big in Europe and India, Japan, Australia.
Well, it's wonderful.
So I realize I'm not actually answering your question.
Yes, you are.
About how has it changed psychology. But
no, it has.
Going and off on my own.
I think we both did a good job of explaining how it has changed, you know. But I think that's a marvelous idea to use TA in, you know, large companies, businesses, how we respond to each other. How, you know, my boss is playing the parent again. He's being, you know, and I'm acting like a child. But how to really work through those relationships and learn how to communicate better. So, you know, we're running out of time here, Susan. I want to let people know how they can get Dr. Susan Legender Clark's Dictionary of Transactional Analysis. What's the best way for them to pick this book up?
There's two venues. You can go to my website, which is www.healingcircle.com. That's one word, healingcircle.com, or go to Amazon.
That's pretty easy.
If you go to my site, then just give me your name and tell me a little bit about yourself, and then I will write something in the book for you, which you won't get from Amazon. But if you come, if you do it for me, that's what I'll do.
That's the way to do it. That's a great idea. Well, Dr. Clark, listen, thank you so much for being on the show today. This has been most enlightening, talking about Eric Byrne's concepts of transactional analysis and this undertaking that you have done to create this dictionary to help people, you know, learn more about themselves and understand transactional analysis. It's wonderful. I would really recommend it for a lot of people.
Thank you.
It's the basis of
thank
so
you, Dr.
many.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle.
You are so welcome. So have a lovely day. And, of course, the show will be available for download and replay tomorrow. It'll be up in the archives. If anybody missed it, folks, you can go back on there. And all my shows are available on iTunes podcast as well.
Yeah.
All right, Susan, have a lovely day. And thanks so much again.
And you too.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, guys, so you can pick that up, and it's a marvelous tool for you. We got to go. CBS News is coming up real soon. So I thank you so much for listening and being on the couch. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for other people. But you got to, you know, you got to work on yourself. You got a lot of stuff. Don't put it on other people, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more of the best of On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. Bye-bye.